Traditional Christmas story. Now, throughout the message this morning, I'm going to be referring to the Christmas story. Now, when you hear the word story, sometimes you think, you know, like flannel graph and little books, or you think like a movie. It's the real, true story. So rather than confuse things, I'll use the term story. But there was a beginning to the Christmas story, and it all started somewhere. Have a look at this.
Every year at this time, we jump into the middle of a story that's been told for hundreds of years. It's a story of cities decorating their streets and their sidewalks. It's a story of trees and ornaments and fireplaces, of gifts and wrapping paper and ribbons. There's expectation and wonder and hope, a deep hope that drives us back to the beginning of the story. Because it all starts here. It starts in a manger with a baby and an angel and a scared teenaged girl in love with a misunderstood young man who thinks she's worth it. It's about a child who will bring light into darkness, joy into despair, revealing a God who will redeem it all. Who is leaving the glory of heaven to pursue the glory of a cross. A God who is becoming flesh and blood and skin. A God who is loving and offering all people a pathway back into the relationship for which they were created. It's too rich to comprehend and too beautiful to dismiss. This is Christmas. This is the story of stories. And it all starts here.
So we all have our favorite Christmas movie, right? So there was a poll done a few years ago, and the top three movies were these. A Christmas Story, A Wonderful Life. Someone said, yes, I heard that. It's A Wonderful Life, and A Christmas Carol. So let's do our own little poll here. You only get to vote once. You vote by putting your hand up. As I read these, let's see what our favorite Christmas movie of these are. Okay, A Christmas Story. Okay, all right. It's A Wonderful Life. Ooh, that's okay. And A Christmas Carol. What? It's not the top three in the poll. Elf. Okay, Elf. Elf it is. Elf it is. Well, there's another movie that wasn't in the top three. That's one of my favorite. It's called Home Alone. Yeah. How many of you seen Home Alone? Yes. Everyone, almost, I think. That's great. Well, listen, if you're not familiar with Home Alone, that's okay. You don't need to feel like an outsider. Great, great movie. It's a story of 8-year-old. What's his name? Kevin. You guys know that, right? Good. You passed the test. 8-year-old Kevin, and he is mistakenly left home alone. Hence the title, right? While his parents and family go on vacation overseas. Now, the late John Hughes wrote this story, and the real difficulty in writing the script for this was to convince us that it was actually possible, actually plausible, that a family could accidentally leave an 8-year-old boy home for Christmas while they traveled to France, right? So if you've seen the movie, you don't even really question it. You just kind of, I think he did a great job of doing that. Now, so I did a poll how many people watched it once. How many have seen it more than 5 times? Okay, keep your hand up. Keep your hand up. If you've seen it more than 10 times, keep your hand up. More than 20? Okay, so there's some of us here who've seen that movie a lot of times. Here's the danger. Here's what happens when you watch a movie too many times. You start to kind of gloss over things, right? You don't pay attention as much. I know in my home, we usually start our Christmas movie viewing season with Home Alone or something like that and slowly slip into Elf. We've already done those and a few others. And while we're watching, suddenly, you know, the phones come out a little bit and you're kind of going through. Sometimes you just want to fast forward through the first part to the good part, you know, the funny part. So that's the part you really want to see. And it can be the same with the Christmas story. Maybe you've heard it lots of times. Maybe you've read it. Maybe you've just heard it in passing. And what we tend to do is we don't pay attention as much anymore. Or we pay attention more to some of the traditions we have around the Christmas story than the actual story itself, because there's lots of traditions we have. Lots of things we sing in carols that aren't actually true. They're just like made up inferences, things we think might have happened. And sometimes we gloss over those and we miss the most important plot twists. So I think that's true of the Christmas story as it is of Home Alone. Here's the reality. As we look at the Christmas story and the true Christmas story, I think we need to look at it with a fresh perspective, with some fresh eyes, that we can look at where it all began, because it all starts there. All the Old Testament, all the first part of the Bible looks forward to that, to the coming of Jesus. He was the hope of salvation. Now, those people were looking for something very different than what they got. But it all started there, and if we don't look carefully and closely and with a fresh perspective, we're not only going to miss what God is saying to us through that, we can miss what he's saying to us through that now. What started there resonates with us now. It was intended to. And here's what I think. I think if we were to write that story, it would look very, very different. I think that some of the unexpected and highly unlikely plot twists wouldn't happen if we were writing the story. Like, for example, no room at the inn, right? Who would write that? So they're going, and Mary and Joseph are traveling to Bethlehem, and guess who else is traveling to Bethlehem? Their whole family, right? Because everyone has to go back to their hometown for this census, and there's no room. What? They have no room. They place their newborn baby. Okay, so like, Wyke, would you want to place Karis in a feed trough? No, you can be honest. No, you don't want to. That's the last place you want your newborn baby. And there's angels and wise men and shepherds and all this stuff going on. We would never write that story that way. We probably would write it in a way where there's a little bit greater of a positive arc. Because if we're honest, we have those questions too. See, we can look at the Christmas story and go, doesn't make a lot of sense. But if we're honest, we look at our own lives and we say the exact same thing. We look at our lives and we go, my life doesn't make a lot of sense. Because if you were writing your story right now, if you had the power to change everything around you, it would probably look a lot different, wouldn't it? We probably have times in our life where we've asked God, like, God, why are you doing this? If you've ever been in one of those difficult periods where you're like, God, why? And if you haven't yet, it'll come. Everybody has them in life. But when we experience those, it gives us an opportunity to look back at where it all started and find something fresh for us. Find something different. We can see a God who understands us, a God who always writes a better story than we could. Because we can look back and ask that question, but we ask the same question now. So we wouldn't write the story the way God would write it. Think again, some of the plot twists. You have a scandalous pregnancy. You have a fiance who's not sure, should he stay with her? What do you do in that? You have a pregnant woman traveling miles and miles and miles, maybe on foot, maybe on a donkey. We don't really know. It doesn't really say. We just know they traveled. You have all this stuff going on. And no one planned ahead. no one made room, not Joseph. What kind of fiance is this guy? Like, he's got nowhere to stay. We wouldn't write it that way. Absolutely not. I don't think that our story is much different than that, because we know that God is involved in our story. See, the story we would write would involve more prestige, or at least a better resolution at the end. See, Jesus eventually dies on a cross. Like, think of your favorite story, okay? Star Wars is coming up, right? So if you think of the original Star Wars movie, there's some resolution to that. yeah, there's plot twists and you have to have that in a good story. What's the tension? And I don't know all the English terms, but the arc of the story kind of goes like this and there's resolution. You don't really find that with Jesus in the way that you would expect. Yes, he rises again. But up until that point, there's not a whole lot of good for his family or others. We want our stories to work out. We absolutely. So why do I think that we would write that story different? It's because we write our stories different. What do we do with most of our time and energy? We're trying to take the lot we've been given, the bad stuff, and make it good. Right? We're trying to become financially healthy and trying to get our relationships well and get a better job and be happy and have time off and go on vacation after vacation after vacation to ignore what's going on back here because we can't take it anymore. We just want to write a different story. We wouldn't write the Christmas story the way God wrote it. There's plot twists. There's things that don't make sense. And for a lot of you, you can sit here and if you look at your story, you probably say something along the lines of, by this point in my life, I was supposed to insert whatever you want. I thought I'd be married by 30. I thought I'd have kids by this age. I thought my kids would turn out a certain way. I thought my marriage would work out. I thought I'd have a good relationship with my family. I thought I'd have this job. I thought I could retire. I thought I would be healthy and wouldn't have to struggle with sickness. I thought that sickness I struggled with a while ago would be gone by now. We have all these questions about our story, but maybe, just maybe, God knew something we don't. Maybe he knew your life and my life really intersect with the story he developed, with the true real life events that he orchestrated 2,000 years ago, so that when we look at our life and look at that with fresh eyes, something resonates. Because if it all worked out, if it was fairy tales and dreamland and all this stuff, we could distance ourselves from it. We could like text while we're watching the movie. But what we need to do is we need to look back with fresh eyes because the mess of that story mirrors the mess of our story. So today we're going to look at someone, and each week we'll look at a different character, someone who really understands what it is to have a plot twist, really understands what being blindsided is like, what it's like to face drama, uncertainty. And yet in the middle of all that, they responded well. They responded in faith. And how that person responds is actually a gift to you and me. That when we face uncertainty, when we have plot twists we don't understand, when things go south, when they go bad, that we can remember how this person responded and we can allow that to bubble to the surface of our life and respond in the same way. And that's my hope, that you would go back to the start with me. Look at this narrative, this story with fresh eyes today, and find yourself in it so that where you're at in your story today, you might find a new beginning, something fresh, something that God is doing that you didn't notice. Because God can be trusted to write your story. Do you know that? God can be trusted to write your story. God is here and he's working in your life. So if you have your Bibles with you, turn to Luke chapter 1. If you don't have Bibles, that's okay. We've got them at the back. You can grab one. We'll have it on the screen as well. But Luke chapter 1. But let me tell you a little bit about Luke before we read this. So Luke is the author of this book called Luke. Surprising, I know. And another book that follows it in the New Testament called the Acts of the Apostles. And so Luke was a doctor. And he was a very detailed, okay? How many of you want a loosey-goosey, non-detailed, non-skilled person who doesn't care about all the little nitpicky things as a doctor? No, I didn't think so, right? So Luke's a doctor, right? And he takes great care. And he writes this letter, and he writes the Acts of Apostles to a guy named Theophilus. Now, we don't know too much about that guy, but we do know he's not a Jew. So he has no church or religious background at all. So when Luke captures the story of Jesus in Luke, and when he captures the story of how the church first started and formed, when Jesus rose again and ascended into heaven and commissioned his apostles and his followers to spread the message of hope and love and peace and salvation throughout the world, he wants a detailed account to this guy who has no background about any of these things. So he would have gone to eyewitnesses, and got their accounts, and he would have listened to the oral traditions, because in that day and age, they didn't like have papers and news feeds and all this. They remembered stories and would just share them. So he took all of that and boiled it down together into a careful account for this man he knew, because he wanted this man to follow Jesus. And so if you are here this morning and you're not in the habit of going to church, you're not used to it, this is all foreign to you, you are in the right place, and this is the right guy to listen to. This is exactly why he wrote this. And for all of you who have heard the Christmas story before, you got to put on fresh eyes. I want you to listen as if you've never heard it before. Don't listen to what you know, listen to what is actually here. So Luke chapter 1, beginning at verse 26. In the sixth month of Elizabeth's pregnancy. So we're not going to deal with Elizabeth too much this morning, but she is a cousin to Mary. God sent an angel Gabriel to Nazareth, a town in Galilee. So what we know there, historically accurate. Okay, so if you're wondering about Mary, you can look back and find Elizabeth. Luke is careful. He's putting real people, real dates, real times, real cities in here. And an angel. So we have to, if you're going to agree with the historically correct people and stuff, you've got to, at first glance, accept the supernatural as well. In the sixth month of Elizabeth's pregnancy, God sent the angel Gabriel to Nazareth, a town in Galilee, to a virgin pledged to be married to a man named Joseph, a descendant of David. The virgin's name was Mary, and the angel went to her and said, "Greetings, you who are highly favored. The Lord is with you." Mary was greatly troubled at his words and wondered what kind of greeting this might be. Greatly troubled. Yeah, anyone we see encountering an angel in the Bible, they're freaked out. They're scared because you're not used to that. Okay, it's frightening. And so they usually say, "Don't be afraid." And so Mary was greatly troubled at this. I'd be greatly troubled too. Now, there are three miraculous birth announcements in the Bible. Abraham and Sarah in the Old Testament, and then Elizabeth, who I already talked about, and her husband Zechariah, and then Mary and Joseph. Now, Abraham and Sarah and Elizabeth and Zechariah, they were both old. They hadn't been able to have children. They were in their old age, and so when an angel came, both of them laughed and said, like, "No, there's no way we're having a baby now. We're like in our 90s. I don't think so." But Mary responded very differently. So watch how she responds. Verse 30. But the angel said to her, "Do not be afraid, Mary. You have found favor with God. You will conceive and give birth to a son." The angel's speaking some things into Mary's life that she needs from God. "And you are to call him Jesus. He will be great and will be called the Son of the Most High. The Lord God will give him the throne of his father David, and he will reign over Jacob's descendants forever. His kingdom will never end." Here's how she responds. "How will this be, Mary?" asked the angel, "since I am a virgin." Pretty good question, I think. She doesn't push back. She doesn't laugh. She says, "No, that can't be." She just says, "Okay, I receive that, but that's impossible. I believe this is going to happen. I just want to know how." Now, for most of us looking back, if you're familiar with the story at all, you're thinking Silent Night, all is calm, all is bright, it's all good, it's Christmas and things. This was terrible news. Okay, girls, grade 8 through 12, how many of you think it's great news to find out you're pregnant today? The parents are gasping. They know, right? No, it's not good news. It's not great. I've walked teens through that process. Everything in your life changes. So while we look and go, "Oh, she got to bear the Messiah, the promised one, the whole Old Testament points towards that, all of that stuff," the reality was that Mary was faced with a complete change of life. And instead of crying and worrying, initially, I mean, there's all sorts of stuff she probably went through, she just asked a question and she received it. Now, what you may not know in that day and age, that for an unwed mother, the penalty under the law was, in its severest form, death. She could be dragged into the center court of town and put to death for sinning and disobeying. So that's the extreme. The other side of it is she'd just be an outcast. And if Joseph didn't do the right thing, you know, if you read onward, Joseph struggled. He wanted to do the right thing because he was a good man. If he left her or didn't do things quite right, she'd be destitute. There weren't homes, there weren't women's shelters. She'd be kicked out of her house, probably. And so she'd have no way of income. She'd be destitute for her life. This was not good news. Now, I've never been an unwed teenage mother, much to your shock, right? But I do know what it is to get some unexpected news. Now, about 13 and a half years ago, we had two wonderful daughters, Alyssa and Caitlin, and we were quite pleased and happy with our family, but we've been trying to have a third. Now, we were told that we wouldn't be able to ever have children, so the two that we did have were a great blessing. And after 4.5 years of trying to have another child, we just decided this is not going to happen. So in May of that year, we sold all our stuff at garage sales. We gave away our crib to a friend of ours who was pregnant and went on with our lives. And we made an appointment to seal the deal. So there would be no more kids in our home. But there were some medical complications and needed to do some testing. So while we were waiting for the testing to take place before the procedure, Stephanie said, I think I might be pregnant. And so we went and got a home pregnancy test, and we went down to the basement of our house, and Stephanie took the test and came out, and she said, it says I'm pregnant. So I went into full-blown denial, and I grabbed the test and the instructions. I went back into the bathroom where the light was better while Stephanie called a friend and was like, you'll never believe it. She's freaking out. I read through all the English. I kid you not. I read top to bottom. I flipped it over. I scanned the French as best I could. Here's what I believe. Okay? All right. On that test was one line. All right. What does one line mean in math? Negative, right? So I was looking for a way in these instructions to tell me what I wanted to hear. Negative. That particular test, it meant if there's nothing, you're not pregnant. If there's a line, you're pregnant. It took me a while to warm up to that idea. Now, Wesley's a huge blessing, and we're glad he came into our home. We wouldn't ever trade him away. We're super proud of him. But I received that news much the way that Abraham and Sarah, Elizabeth and Zechariah did. Mary was very different. Mary was very different. So she asked this question, how will this happen? And in verse 35, the angel answers her. The angel answered, the Holy Spirit will come on you, and the power of the Most High will overshadow you. So the Holy One to be born will be called the Son of God. Even Elizabeth, your relative, is going to have a child in her old age. He's confirming. He's like, this has been done before, and it's going to happen with you. And she who is said to be unable to conceive is in her sixth month. The angel confirms and says what Luke says. For, this is the most important verse, for no word from God will ever fail. The angel is speaking things from God over and into Mary's life. Other translations say it this way, for nothing is impossible with God. Nothing. What I didn't share with you about that season of life is that that was probably one of the worst seasons of her life. Church was busy and seemed to be going well, but I was drifting from God. Personally, I wasn't doing well. Our marriage was horrible. So our lives weren't going well. And I kind of had some of these questions about, God, why is this happening? What's going on? And receiving that news meant these things. Financial burden. Now we got to buy back all this stuff. We actually phoned up the friend that we gave the crib to and said, you'll never believe it. We need our crib back. So we took the crib back. It's okay. We're good friends. We can do that. So it meant some financial stress. It meant a stress at home. And with Stephanie, pregnancy has never gone well in our home. And so with some different medical difficulties and stuff, she was put on bed rest. And so for me, that meant I bear the load of the household. And it meant I needed to change work schedules. Then they found things wrong with Wesley in the womb. And we had to go weekly or biweekly to hospital appointments in Hamilton. Our whole life was upside down. This was not good news to me initially. But God did the impossible through the unexpected. And what he did in that season is he drew me closer to him than I'd ever been. He drew Stephanie and I closer because we couldn't get away from each other. We had to hang out in a car at least one day a week, and sit and get bad news after bad news and bad, and all we had was each other. The church became closer to us than ever. Trinity Church up in Waterloo, and they sent meals and prayed for us. I experienced church family like I never had before. I got a picture and an image of what it's supposed to be like. And he answered prayer in a way that we'd never seen. He healed Wesley. And so Wesley was born without any of the complications or things they found each and every week. Stephanie was just talking to someone, I think Friday night, about that, saying we couldn't figure it out how every week we went, they found another new thing and something else worse and something. Every time they found something worse. But God did the impossible through the unexpected. And if you find yourself in that situation today, you're saying, God, at this point in my life, my story should be different. I don't know what you're doing. Then you know that you can place trust in his ability to write your story better than you could ever do it. I can't promise how it will work out. Oftentimes, God doesn't change your circumstances. You know what he changes? He changes you. He always promises to change your heart and your mind, even if he doesn't change your circumstances. And that's really Christmas, right? That's the story of Christmas. People whose lives were just a mess, and they intersected the Savior and were completely changed forever. Verse 38, here's how Mary responds. Not the way I responded. She said this, "I am the Lord's servant," Mary answered. "May your word to me be fulfilled." Then the angel left her. How do you respond in uncertainty and fear? She simply says this, "I'm the Lord's servant." In other words, I trust you with my story. I'm going to follow you. It's okay. I'm yours. I am the Lord's servant. And then she says, "May it be done to me according to your word." When you want to react in fear, respond in faith. When you want to react in fear, I want to encourage you to respond in faith. Trust God to write your story and allow that prayer to be your prayer. I am the Lord's servant. May it be done to me as according to your word. May the things you've spoken into my life, like you spoke into Mary, come true, actually happen. Let's be honest. Mary had quite a crazy ride of life. Started like this with Jesus, and then she watched him for 33-ish years, both before he started public ministry and after, and then she stood watching her son be crucified, right? All that hope, everything she'd held on to, it says later on that she treasured these things quietly in her heart, would have just melted away as a mother. But then he rose again, and her life was like this. But she says, and I think she, based on what we see of her in the gospel accounts, I think she said this the whole time. I'm the Lord's servant. May it be done to me according to your word. Here's some of the examples from Scripture, things that God speaks over you. If you've chosen to follow Jesus, if you believed in him, here's what he says about you. I am a child of God. I am God's workmanship. I am totally and completely forgiven. I am God's child. I am Jesus' friend. I am a whole new person with a whole new life. I am a place where God's Spirit lives. I am totally and completely forgiven. I am created in God's likeness. I am a citizen of heaven. I am greatly loved. This is just a small sampling. All of those things God speaks over you. So when you don't understand what God is doing, remember what he's spoken. When you don't understand what God is doing, I want you to remember what he has spoken so that you can respond in faith instead of fear. So that you can say, even if you don't understand, even if things are horrible and bad and they don't seem to be working out, you can say, I'm the Lord's servant. I may not understand this, but I trust you. May it be done to me according to your word. May the things you've spoken, may the promises you've given take place in my life and in the life around me. When we see the Christmas story as all calm and bright and, you know, it all works out, it distances us. It makes it seem like fiction. But when we can look with fresh eyes at a teenage girl who had her world turned upside down, and God stuck with her, then where you're at makes a little more sense, because God's writing your story too. That what was started there actually has a meaning and a reason in your life now. That when you don't understand what God is doing, I want you to remember what he has spoken. Today as we close, I want us to spend just some time in prayer. I'm going to ask the worship team forward. And we're going to sing to close our service. But before that, I just want to pray over you. And during that time, here's what I want to happen. I'm going to encourage when we start praying for everyone just to close their eyes.